Welcome to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, one of the fastest growing movie podcasts in the world, where we discuss all things film. On this episode, we discuss Marvel's Shang-Chi. Hello, movie friends. Welcome back to the show. This is Anthony.
This is James. Today, we're going to do a mini review on Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, starring Simu Liu, directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, written by Dave Callahan, also Destin Daniel Cretton, and Andrew Lanham.
And Shang-Chi was a great time. I think that Marvel once again proved that whatever they touch is just gold for audiences.
They can do anything, yeah.
Yeah, like first it happened with Guardians of the Galaxy, where you took this group of heroes that mainstream audiences had never heard of, and they made them superstars. And the same thing with Shang-Chi, you know, a character that anyone outside of comic book world and fandom had never heard of. I had never heard of him. And then they made him a superstar. So I think that Marvel has really shown that they have the secret formula to make audiences love a movie.
Yeah, and also the marketing of this film is super interesting. Like it's been so heavy on like TikTok and Instagram, where people are marketing the movie for Marvel in an immense way. Like, it's everywhere. It's all anyone's talking about. So it's like they don't even have to put that much time and money into marketing their movies anymore, especially something like Shang-Chi. So it's incredible to see the outpouring of love and anticipation to see this movie for people who had never seen a Shang-Chi movie.
And it did well at box office. What was it, 60 million?
It was actually 70 million opening weekend for Labor Day. So I think it broke the Labor Day weekend record. And then in terms of pandemic, COVID releases, I think it's second
for Godzilla
for opening weekend. I think Godzilla was like 100.
Yeah, I think Godzilla crushed it. But Godzilla was like the first big movie back, so I think people really were curious about going to the theaters again. But Marvel, I mean, and the reason why 70 million doesn't sound like a lot, but for September, that's a big deal, because big movies come out in the summer and smaller movies come out in the fall. So be able to make 70 million opening weekend in September is a big deal.
And so the time that this movie takes place, so it's after Avengers Endgame, but I think it's before Spider-Man Far From Home, or like around that same period, kind of the same period as Falcon and the Winter Soldier as well. And I think obviously after WandaVision, because WandaVision, that takes place, what, 2 weeks basically after Endgame?
Yeah, right after
something
it. Because
like
Vision's
that.
Body's still there.
So it's somewhere in that area of like maybe before Far From Home. I could be wrong. Someone can correct me in the comments if I have the placement of the where it is in the timeline of the Avengers Phase 4, because this is technically, it's not the first movie post Endgame that we've gotten.
It's not the first Phase 4.
We've gotten a Phase 4 Black Widow movie
flashback,
but that was like a doesn't count because
it's not
place,
part of Phase 4.
It took
4.
Place before
Phase 3.
And the end of Phase 3. So
yeah.
That's like, so it's really technically the first Phase 4 movie, you could say. I mean, the second Spider-Man movie kind of was too, I guess, because that was the first one after Endgame, right?
Yeah.
So something like that.
Yeah, that's about right. It's getting a little confusing now.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Nolan could clear it up for us.
Yeah, yeah.
He knows all about time jumps.
But I had a good time with Shang-Chi because it reminded me a lot of Winter Soldier, where the combat and the martial arts in Shang-Chi is fantastic. You know, I think they had the choreographer from The Matrix who did this. I think he passed away right before the film was released, though, unfortunately. So they had a lot of people who knew what the hell they were doing. Their stunt team was excellent. The martial arts is so well choreographed. And kind of like Winter Soldier, what I loved about that movie the first time I saw it, and why it's one of my favorite MCU movies, it's like in my top three, is the combat was so different than what we were used to with the previous Marvel movies. Because obviously Hulk smashes, Thor just throws his hammer around and lightning and stuff like that. Iron Man flies around. Captain America, you could say, has his own style of combat and fighting compared to all the other fighters. And we actually see that. And then we see it with Shang-Chi has his own very specific martial arts that he uses.
And it's something that I think Marvel was always missing in terms of combat, because we grew up watching Jet Li movies, Jackie Chan movies, the older Bruce Lee movies. And it was great to watch these big budget box office movies. But including the spectacle, there's great hand-to-hand combat and great martial artists. You and I have a bit of a background in martial arts, and so we know what that art form and that craft is like and how difficult it is. And so it's great to see that in a Marvel movie finally, because Shang-Chi, without the rings, he doesn't have any superpowers. He's just a man, just like Iron Man without a suit. So I really enjoyed as well. I think the strength of the movie was the combat. And this movie, it reminded you of Winter Soldier, but for me, it reminded me of Black Panther, because you have these two people who come from the, in terms of Black Panther, come from the same world. And then in this film, father and son. So they have a deep personal connection. They have the same abilities by the end of the film. And they are fighting to control the power of the society in terms of Shang-Chi fighting his father. And then Black Panther fighting Killmonger. So it reminded me, plus the big spectacle of the giant battle at the end, I got definitely reminded of Black Panther's third act.
Well, that now that you bring up the father-son relationship, how in both those films, whereas in obviously in Shang-Chi, his father's a villain, the Mandarin, played by also Wenwu, played by Tony Leung. It reminds me now also of Thanos and Gamora. You know, that father-daughter, father-son relationship where you've followed your father to an extent, but then you've abandoned him or left him because you can't put up with the things that he does anymore, which is basically what Shang-Chi does. You know, Shang-Chi basically exiles himself. What is he, like 14 years old after he's forced to do that mission by his father, the assassination, because he's brought up in that intense discipline of training by his father after his father becomes the Mandarin for the second time. And so Shang-Chi, similar to Gamora, exiles from their father to kind of, well, Shang-Chi more hides who he is. You know, he goes by Sean now. He works at that valet with Awkwafina. And so he's hiding in plain sight, basically, to escape his father, to escape his past. Whereas Gamora does the same thing, but she does it with the Guardians.
Daddy issues in the Marvel Universe.
For sure, big time.
But Tony Leung is an icon in China, in the cinema history of that entire country.
Have you ever seen The Grandmaster?
Yeah, oh yeah. He's great as it, man. Yeah. But he's also been in a ton of Wong Kar-wai movies. So he's an icon in that country. And this was actually his first American production. It's the first time he ever worked with an English-speaking crew. So I'm sure it was nice for him to work with a different crew from around the world and be a part of a big universe expanding film like this. And I'm sure he'll show up again. But I think that him as the Mandarin was obviously a great improvement upon Trevor from Iron Man 3,
yeah,
which I never liked.
I think Marvel was like, oh, we kind of messed up and everyone hates this. I hated it so much when I saw it.
I agree. I think that, I mean, because when Iron Man 3 came out, Feige and Marvel were like, oh, we wanted to subvert expectations and, you know, surprise the audience. So I think that then they were sticking to their guns with making the Mandarin just a disguise by Guy Pearce's character. I can't remember his name. And then I think over the last few years, they've been like, you know what? We need to actually bring the Mandarin into the story for real. So I think they completely turn over on their plan with that.
They're like,
it was him the whole time.
There is a real Mandarin.
It was Wenwu this whole time.
Let's just forget about what we did those other two times.
So it's a double fake.
But it's like, interesting because they hinted at the Ten Rings in the first Marvel MCU film. So Iron Man, when he's captured and kidnapped, and they're taking he's being held hostage, and they're recording that basically ransom video. The tarp behind them, the curtain, it's the Ten Rings logo, basically.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Their brand. Like, it's like Ten Rings, then sponsored by Red Bull.
And speaking of that, I like how, with Wenwu, the Mandarin, how I think this is possibly was the first time that Marvel went back to ancient culture in their entire filmography.
I think maybe.
Because
MCU.
Yeah, MCU. Because not counting, like, intergalactic, like, I'm sure, like, you know, Thanos, I don't know how old he is, but I'm sure they're hundreds of years old. But this is the first time, I believe, that we went back to an ancient culture in terms of the Wenwu's background with his character when he got the Ten Rings and became the Mandarin and was a warlord in ancient China for a while. So I really like that aspect of showing the background of his character and how he's literally like thousands of years old because of the rings.
Yeah, and the characters are all really well developed, and specifically staying on Wenwu and how he became the Mandarin, then he fell in love with Li, and then he decided not to be the Mandarin, and then after Li's death, he thinks she's dead. He becomes the Mandarin again and is even worse of a warlord, you could say.
He's always driven by his love and the things that happen to him. So I understand they did a good job with this villain. It's one of the Marvel's best villains for sure, because even though he abandoned the idea of the Mandarin to be part of his family, he went back to the Mandarin because of the love of his life being taken from him.
And spoilers, I'm going to start saying some stuff, guys, if you haven't seen the movie.
Yeah. This is a review.
A full warning now for spoilers. And then his character gets even more fleshed out, you know, when he fights his son for the first time, defeats his son, banishes him to the lake. And then when Wenwu sacrifices himself basically to save his son, then transfers the Ten Rings to him right before he dies. So he kind of
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Comes full circle as a character, and he has probably the most ups and downs of his character in terms of arcs.
Oh yeah, I think he's the most interesting character in the movie. Although Shang-Chi is a great character, and Simu Liu did a fantastic job leading this movie. It's a big movie. It's his first major blockbuster, and that's a very daunting task for a newish actor. And so to be able to pull off this performance in this gigantic film, that means a lot to a lot of people. I think that he did an outstanding job.
Yeah, I liked Awkwafina in this movie too. She's obviously like that humor outlet that Marvel needs in their films, and she does a great job with it. She's super funny.
No, this is a movie where not every character is a sarcastic comedian because they can just funnel it through her.
Yeah, that's what I like about it, rather than everyone. Like, that's what my always thing about the Avengers movies is everyone is a stand-up comedian. But then let's just have one character do the main comedy, which works better. I think that's a better format.
I think that's better too.
And she's kind of like, it seems like she'll be a future love interest for Shang-Chi.
Maybe
not, but she's sort of like Pepper Potts, but funnier.
It's important not to have them have a relationship right now.
But also, unlike Pepper Potts, who you could say in Iron Man 1 is in love with Tony, despite Tony not realizing or even noticing her besides being his assistant, it's not like that with Katie and Shang-Chi, where she's not like secretly looking at him and obsessed with him and in love with him and trying to get him to notice her. She just like,
they're just pals.
They're buds. Pals. Yeah,
that's like they go out drinking, they hang out and socialize and work together. So it's just like they're friends.
It feels like they're building something there, though.
Exactly
for the future.
But it definitely feels like a real friendship. Like those few scenes in the first act of them hanging out together, I think that really ties the connection to the audience with the characters.
But I think Shang-Chi overall was like a new heartbeat, new kind of energy that the MCU really needed, especially when we're throwing in all the martial arts, because the first two acts of the film, tons of hand-to-hand combat and martial arts, which is really great. Again, the choreography is fantastic.
Yeah, I'd say the highlight is the razor fist fight on the bus.
I wish there would have been more of that in the third act, because the third act, they just go full Avengers superpowers combat style.
That's where I'm saying it reminded me of Black Panther. It had that same like gigantic battle where I would say like you don't have to do that in the first film of a franchise. Maybe expand, maybe keep the stakes smaller. But I think they did that as a way to get everyone involved. I think the part of the formula is to make sure that all the characters they've established are involved in the climax rather than just the two leads. And so as a way of doing that, just have these giant armies battle. Then you can have every single character having their part to play in the finale.
It would have been cool if Shang-Chi and his father had to fight without powers power of the Ten Rings. I think that would have been cool, because that would be the whole point of it being a martial arts movie, where the big final combat battle at the end between the protagonist and antagonist, like it usually is in martial arts films and kung fu films, is always the best part, where we have the ultimate martial arts sequences of the film.
Yeah, I would definitely agree, because I would say that the fights in the first act of the movie are the best fights in the movie.
Yeah, within 30 minutes, I'm like, this movie's sick.
Because it's raw, it's visceral, it reminds you of the movies we grew up on, because we're such fans of those actors, and it felt different for the MCU, whereas I definitely understand why they're like, we need to have them fight with the powers, but also it kind of took you out of, like, I wanted those first fights to be this great epic battle between father and son without powers, like you said, and then Shang-Chi can use the powers of the Ten Rings to fight the demon at the end.
Yeah.
So he could still use the Ten Rings for the next battle, but it doesn't have to be against his father. I think also it would have shown like a more visceral, raw way of him earning the power of defeating his father.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
More deserving of the rings.
But you know, that's the MCU. This is like their movies all hit the same beats. Same thing with Black Widow. We wish they would have toned that down as well instead of having it
less CGI.
That was basically the Avengers in Black Widow format, and same thing with some of the other MCU movies that we've talked about, where it would be cool to tone it down a little bit, but it is what it is. That's how they do their films.
Yeah, I would just say for a first movie to keep it a little bit smaller. That's what I would prefer, but it still works.
Overall, it was a really good time. I would say I want to watch it again before I like throw it in like my top like 10 MCU films, because
there's 25 now.
There's so many.
Yeah, there's 25.
So it's hard to constantly rearrange your list, but I could see if I watch it again, I still really enjoy it, I could put it in my top 10 up there with like films like Winter Soldier and Infinity War, Endgame.
Yeah, and then a movie
Thor Ragnarok.
A movie like this, the highlights are obviously the production design, cinematography is excellent, the costume and wardrobing are really fantastic, and I like the implementation of like that secret city, Ta-Lo, which has like these mythical beasts in it. Super cool, so very different for the MCU, and also, obviously you can see inspiration from films like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and things like that, which were like homages to those films, which we love.
And then we have some credit scenes. You know, we have Bruce Banner's back, and he's not the Hulk anymore, which is interesting. So, and what's he say? He says that they're giving off a signal, the Ten Rings. So,
and Captain Marvel's there too.
And I don't know if that has something to do with the Eternals or something with future villain.
It's gonna be maybe reaching out to someone out there.
Yeah, and then
I don't know. What I was gonna
and then Shang-Chi gives Zha Ling the Ten Rings, so she'll be in charge of the Ten Rings. So will she get corrupted by the Ten Rings like her father and become a major villain in the MCU?
That'd be cool.
Why not? That'd be pretty cool because, you know, it was an evil organization for so long.
I'm just curious, in terms of Shang-Chi, I mean, he's a title character. What part is he, how involved can he be in, like, big action sequences leading in the following films and especially team-up movies if he doesn't have the power of the Ten Rings?
Yeah.
So I'm just curious what they'll do with him now that he doesn't have the rings.
Well, we'll find out. I mean, Black Widow did fine. She did a pretty good job, and so did Hawkeye.
Yeah,
although, like, we talked about...
But he doesn't have, like, a weapon he can shoot at people.
True, but she only had those, like, electrocuting wrist things.
And the batons.
Not always.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
She hardly ever had the batons.
You're right.
You know, like, that's what we talked about, like, Hawkeye... Black Widow, they never needed superpowers, but they were also exceptional at a specific thing. Hawkeye, obviously, shooting bow and arrow.
Yeah.
And then Black Widow, just martial arts hand-to-hand combat with her gear. So maybe it'll be kind of like Black Widow's repertoire of tools and weaponry where he'll have martial arts with him, obviously, but like maybe some other cool gadgets to help him out.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah.
And I'm curious to see if Big Hulk will come back. I don't know.
We'll see. Well, She-Hulk will be coming out in a few months, so we'll keep an eye out for that.
But yeah, that wraps up our mini review on Shang-Chi. Hope you all had a good time watching this movie. If you checked it out, it'll be on Disney Plus in, what, another 2-3 weeks?
40 days.
Oh, 40 days. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it just came out. That's
40
right.
days.
So yeah, 3 more weeks, 4 more weeks.
But I'm sure if you feel comfortable going to the theater, definitely check it out. We got it. If you feel comfortable going to a theater, if you love Marvel, check it out. Marvel's back in theaters, so that's always a good thing. And hope you enjoy this movie as much as we
do. Yeah, and yesterday we just posted our episode on the Spider-Man Sam Raimi trilogy with Tobey Maguire, and it was so fun to do,
epic.
So check that out. And then Thursday we have something else special coming for you.
And also our Patreon episode posts on Wednesday. That's a secret, though.
Yeah, so take care, everybody. Have a great week.
Bye.
Raiders of the Lost Podcast is a Mirror Image production. Sound mixing done by Jacob Kosler. Opening music by Chase Jackson.